The Squawker Talker is sponsored by BetOnBrazil.com. It's the betting site for all sports punters with great odds, markets, and offers. Listeners to this podcast can now get up to £60 deposit matched when you use the promo code Squawker60. Just visit BetOnBrazil.com and enter the promo code Squawker60 when you deposit, and we will match your deposit up to £60. Also, look out for our daily happy hour offers between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Sign up now at betonbrazil.com. Bet on Brazil is for over 18s only. Betting should be fun, so please gamble responsibly.
Welcome back to the Squawker Talker. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and joining me today is an action-packed, talent-packed podcast. To start off the new year, Mohammed Butt is here once again from Squawker.
Happy New Year, Greg. Happy New Year, listeners everywhere.
Happy New Year to you as well. Tom Marshall-Bailey from Football London is here. New site, new year. How's it all going?
Absolutely brilliant, thank you. Yeah, we kicked off on Tuesday ahead of the Bournemouth-Arsenal game. And hopefully the reaction seems to have been brilliant so far. So, looking forward to really continuing where we've started with the FA Cup this weekend.
Beautiful. And Carl Anker is also here, a freelance writer in many subjects, including wrestling, video games, and of course, football. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Welcome, True Believers.
Well, speaking of True Believers, there has been a little bit of a weird reaction to Chelsea's loss to Spurs. Obviously, that was the big title, well, not deciding, but title influencing clash in midweek before the FA Cup fixtures, which we'll be getting onto very shortly. Spurs won 2-0 thanks to two wonderfully well-taken headers by Dele Alli. But there's after the game, there was almost like a reaction to reactions about, don't write off Chelsea just yet. How are people writing them off? They're still, I think, 5 points clear. They've just won 13 in a row. That was their first loss. What's going on, Carl?
Gods do bleed. Is the most succinct way I can put it. They went 13 in a row. They absolutely destroy teams every single challenge. And they looked quite ordinary. Poch did amazing Poch ball again. So now we've seen Pochettino put out Spurs sides that have completely decimated teams that we thought would run away with the title. They've done it to City, they've done it to Chelsea. And the wins are so comprehensive that it gets everyone thinking, oh my God, it's possible. They can bleed. There is a blueprint. This guy has a blueprint. Spurs can do it. And I think that's why the panic is, because Chelsea looks so invulnerable.
But yeah, this is a different Spurs side to maybe any that have been before quite recently. I mean, Pochettino is arguably up there with the great tacticians in the league. And I mean, of all the teams in the Premier League, you don't want to be facing Spurs, do you? They make it very difficult for whoever they're facing, Tom.
I thought it was really significant that he went with three at the back. I think the initial reaction when the team news came out was one of kind of bemusement a little bit from both sets of fans. I think Everton, obviously, at Stamford Bridge earlier this season, but they tried to match it up and clearly that didn't work.
5-0.
Exactly. And I think there was probably a sense amongst the Spurs fan base of, you know, are we really trying to, you know, go with the same formation when, you know, the two sitters in Wanyama and Dembele in that formation can really flourish. But the way that they just completely overran Chelsea in the midfield battle, I thought was excellent. Mm. Kante, I haven't seen N'Golo Kante have a game that bad since he joined Leicester, to be honest with you. I thought he was completely, I don't want to say overawed by the occasion, but Dembele and Wanyama were winning all the second balls, releasing the ball quickly. And I think that the big thing from a Chelsea perspective as well was Alonso and Moses almost looked frightened to offer those attacking outlets down the flanks. And that's been quite a, you know, signature part of this. I felt like they were just naturally pinned back a lot of the time. Yeah. That speaks volumes of how well Rose and Walker were playing.
Well, Kante actually made a defensive error, which is also quite unlike him. Him and Hazard got defensive errors in that game. Just talking about Kante and the wing-backs, I mean, we often talk about how Kante is so good, he's like two players in one. Costa's kind of been that a bit as well up front for Chelsea this season, he's worked great. Yeah. But we kind of saw it out wide with Rose and Walker. Spurs have got their own two players that kind of double up as two men at times.
Yeah, well, I mean, Spurs' fullbacks have been, for a while, the most, you don't want to say best, but certainly the most dominant in the league. And what this 3-4-2-1 formation does with Spurs is it allows them to just, their fullbacks to just go forward and dominate. And it puts them, and this is the difference, this is really the big difference to Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen, because they were playing the half space in the two sides, either side of Harry Kane. And they could go wide or come central, but they could come central so often because the two fullbacks were wingbacks now, and there was constant width down the outside. Mm-hmm. And all they did was stretch Chelsea out, and it basically just meant that Kante and Matic had so much ground to cover.
You've been talking, Mo, a lot this season about the arrival of these great coaches such as Klopp and Guardiola to really uplift the Premier League and get it up to a higher level of football than perhaps we've seen over the last few years. Is this one of the first matches to really deliver on that? Both sides looked... Chelsea looked beaten, but still very well coached. And Spurs under Poch, obviously, they're a coach's team, aren't they?
Yeah, I think we've had a few matches like the Manchester Derby, I thought, was an excellent example of both coaches' brilliant abilities to game plan, to change games with Mourinho, to Guardiola's game plan. First half was flawless. I think City-Spurs was another example of Poch's just brilliance. And then today... We've seen, these are great coaches. Poch was already here, of course, but now he's been... It's almost like these coaches have arrived and they've sort of made him up his level. He's like, okay, now I'm really with the big boys. And I mean, he did this before with Espanyol when he was playing against the best Barcelona side ever, the best team ever, maybe. And he would always up his game and always really, really give them, like, absolute battles. Barcelona never had an easy win against his teams. We're already seeing that standard of football this season is so much higher than it was last season. Even though teams are dropping points, making mistakes at the back... It's so much better, and it's going to get better as well.
Mm. Speaking of things getting better, is the title race back on, Tom? Or was it ever really off?
I think Liverpool will be hugely frustrated about that Sunderland result now. It's still a two result swing. That's by no means insurmountable. I think I'd still make Chelsea favourites, but given Man United's form, I don't think you can rule them out now. I honestly think it is it's a six-horse title race.
Wow.
There are teams in there that I would be... surprised whether they could go on and do it. I don't think Arsenal will do it. I don't think Manchester City will do it. I think there's too much defensive vulnerability about City for them to go on and get a run of results like Chelsea have done. I just think that there's no way that it can just be coincidental that they've gone on a run like that and kept so many clean sheets.
What of Spurs? Are they contenders now? Or how far can they go? Is there too much space to make up? Are they still a bit too Spursy?
that's a lot of questions. I think the title race is done. I predicted at the start of the season Chelsea were going to win it. I think they've got the best coach.
I remember this.
I think they've got the best coach. I think they've got the best midfield player in Kante. I think they've got the best attacking player in Hazard. I think Costa's golden boot contender. I think playing one game a week, that's the real advantage.
That's the huge advantage.
If you're going to play, absolutely. If you're going to switch a tactic on the fly in the way that Chelsea have, playing one game a week is the system you've got to do. Having an extra 3 days to get that system into him works.
Yeah.
So I think it's there. I think, like Tom said, winning 13 games in a row, they'll easily go and have two more spells where they win like five games in a row or six games in a row.
Yeah.
I think Spurs are great. They've got some players that have come back. They're going to be top four contenders. I don't know if we're going to have a St. Tottenham's Day. I hope not. I'd really like them to see. I'd really like to put them to bed. I think that will be their title this season.
But is there a chance that, after spending half the season messing around with new systems, Poch just talked about how basically he's trying to expand his team's range of possibilities, that now they can get this rhythm that they had last season, stick to the same team week in, week out, and start to really kind of steamroll teams?
Europa League's coming.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Europa League's coming. If Alderweireld goes down again, you never know. Kane was... very poor in the Chelsea game, I must say.
He moved well, but you could tell he didn't have the zip. None of his take-on attempts were coming off.
This was a game at the end of a very busy festive
schedule. It was. But so Kane looked off sorts. Dele Alli playing as a sort of second striker in this new system is masking some of that. But it's Spurs, and my dad's a Spurs fan, and he will never, ever let me ever talk about Spurs doing too well, because... you're just setting yourself up for disappointment. Son.
Yeah, look, Dele Alli has six goals in three games, right? Everyone's been amazed, but it's six goals.
Seven goals in four.
In the Premier League, it's a six goals from three shots from six shots on target.
Yeah.
He's literally scoring with every chance he's hitting the target with, and three shots off target, one shot blocked. So he's in incredible form right now, but that's not sustainable. Mm. You don't keep that up.
Pochettino said he's a very special player for English football, probably the most important player for English football. His current generation. Do you stand by that?
I think so. I think you can see it. You can see the way he plays. His ability to find space is really special. He's never going to be like a great creative player like Paul Scholes was, for example. But what he can be for England is sort of like Frank Lampard with legs. If Lampard could run.
I wrote ahead of the game the other day that I think it was too premature to say that he can emulate the achievements of Lampard. But watching him the other day, the timing of the runs.
Yeah.
It, it, honestly, it was reminiscent of watching him in his prime. Just,
it's like his spatial awareness. I think that's what it is, isn't it? It's just, it's...
That's a great point. A really interesting thing that you have to bring up with Dele Alli is the fact that he learned how to play football on concrete pitches. So he learned how to play football in Milton Keynes, and there are quite a lot of players coming from Milton Keynes, from South London, that learn how to play football on concrete pitches, and it's all about, ball's going to bounce off the wall. Where do I have to be?
Yeah.
It's like tight places. I need to learn my street moves to get past this one
guy. Street football.
And also learning how to like trash talk. Dele Alli is a wonderful, horrible lizard of a midfield player. And if you watch him closely, he is constantly playing.
A wonderful, horrible lizard.
Wonderful, horrible lizard. He's like the best kind
of... A Delisaur.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he's a terrible little twerp on the pitch. And that's a great midfield player to have. Just someone who is going to do something amazing, then turn around and scream in a defender's play. That's how you do it.
Are you saying
Are you saying
Dele Alli is a world class Robbie Savage?
I was going to say.
I'm not saying that.
Is that what you're
getting saying?
We're going to have to move. We've talked a lot about Spurs and Chelsea, understandably, because it's a massive game in the title race. We're going to have to move on now to the other side of North London. Actually, more geographically accurate, we're going to move to the South Coast, where Bournemouth held Arsenal to a 3-3 draw. I mean, what is it, Mo, with Eddie Howe and these big visitors come to the Vitality Stadium, and he kind of sorts them out. Liverpool lost their 4-3.
It's kind of like Spurs in that he knows how to coach his team, gets him up for a big game, man. And Bournemouth is a weird little ground. No one really has experience of playing there. It's sort of like, what are we doing down here? Where's this place? And, you know, they're a very organised side, Bournemouth. They shoot themselves in the foot repeatedly with defensive mistakes, but...
Simon Francis.
Yeah, well, exactly. But, you know, they are very ambitious. And when a small, ambitious team shows up against a big side and really goes at them, and the big side is expecting them to just lay over and die, they get quite unawares a lot. Liverpool were 3-1 up thinking, yeah, that's it. We'll coast this out. Bournemouth were like, no, you won't. So, you know, and they just went at them. Arsenal thinking, okay, we're going to come here and we'll beat these guys 2-0 minimum effort. And they come out, no, you won't. And they get him flying at Arsenal, 3-0 up. And I mean, their quality couldn't tell in the end. They got a red card, you know, but...
A bit like the new Swansea in some ways.
Yeah, kind of like that. Or Blackpool under Ian Holloway. Just fearless, really fearless. Mm. Go at teams with a bit more quality than those sides, a bit more organisation. Eddie Howe's a really special coach, and I hope he manages his career well. Doesn't Icarus it, you know?
Yeah. Tom, speaking of special individuals in this fixture, Olivier Giroud, the saviour off the bench. I mean, in the Premier League, he has 1.20 goals per game, which is the most of any player in the division at the moment, coming off the bench. The super sub extreme this season. But Sanchez is a bit of a malcontent. He doesn't look very happy. And he's actually been involved in the most goals in the Premier League this season with 13 goals, 7 assists. What do Arsenal do? Have they got an unhappy marriage up front at the moment? Or where do they go from here?
People have drawn parallels a lot with Sanchez over the last few days of kind of Henry a little bit when he was looking around post-Invincibles, looking at players like Adebayor, Hleb, those kind of players that were in the same 11 as him, and he knew that he was obviously on the wane to a degree post Invincibles, but he was looking around him and wondering where is the talent in this team, where is my Dennis Bergkamp, my Freddie Ljungberg, my Robert Pirès that have been feeding me for all these years. And I just get the impression with Sanchez that the number of times I've seen pictures of him and Ozil on the pitch really, you know, kind of interacting with each other, and there's that real kind of camaraderie between the two of them. I just don't get that sense with any of the other players. The Ramsey spat that happened, that's happened fairly frequently between Sanchez and Ramsey. I've noticed that. It's a huge opportunity for Ramsey now over the next few weeks with Coquelin out to stake a claim, and he absolutely has to, because...
Doesn't really have a role at the moment, does he?
No, he's kind of just flitting here and there, and he needs to nail down something. And this is the golden opportunity. He was awful the other night, Ramsey, I thought. I think it wasn't really until Lucas came on. There was a bit of impetus there. There was someone else that was running in behind. I know Ramsey had that one chance from Giroud's flick, but I just felt that it was a real opportunity squandered for some of the players coming in, some of the second... Dare I call Aaron Ramsey a second string member of the Arsenal squad? I'm going to get absolutely slammed for
that.
You're not
wrong.
But frankly, right now he is.
It was a massive opportunity to miss for the whole team as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're now 8 points off the top. I mean,
exactly.
United are just 2 points behind them. I think they had an 8 point gap previously.
Before Christmas, I think they were two points before December, they were 2 points behind Chelsea, like 8 ahead of United, and now it's like completely flipped around. Yeah.
I think it illustrated as well with Granit Xhaka. He'd played very well in the West Brom and Palace games. I thought he was dictating the tempo of the game it very much seems to me, given his anonymity against Everton and City previously, that he's, you know, fine in the comforts of the Emirates when Arsenal are dictating possession. But when they really have to, you know, kind of roll up their sleeves, forgive the cliche, and get stuck in, and well, frankly, he got stuck in a bit too much on Ryan Fraser for the penalty. But
he has got a horrendous disciplinary record.
Absolutely,
he just loves a tackle. I think a lot of these players come to England and think, okay, what do you mean? You said you could tackle in this country.
No, even Germany, I think he had something ridiculous. Yeah. His red card record was ridiculous.
It was impossible to avoid the kind of belief on Tuesday for me that Jack Wilshere would have had an influence in that Arsenal midfield. Xhaka there needed to be what Wilshere can do in that team and get on the move a little bit. I think that's my frustration with Xhaka is I think he's a good passer of the ball, and I think he can kind of be what Arteta was for Arsenal in that he can recycle possession effectively, but he's never going to be a Cazorla or a Wilshere who can actually, for me, really break the lines with those passes and get Arsenal kind of on top in a game. He's a bit of a steady Eddie for me.
That's a lot of money spent on a steady Eddie.
I think that's
exactly
that's a lot of money. That's frustrating.
I think that's a bit harsh. I think you have to give him time. He's only been in the country 6 months. I think some players you have to give at least a year to get really settled. You know what I mean? He's not going to get it straight away.
You're saying he's a deep lying Kagawa?
Well, okay. Let's not talk about him. Yeah, that's just upsetting.
Still hurts.
That's just too
still
upsetting for everyone involved.
Before we get lost, we're going to move on now to the FA Cup fixtures and Chelsea. It would be disrespectful to call it a gimme against Peterborough, but they could have asked for a far harder draw to get back on the horse to some extent in their first cup game of the new year, Carl.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be fine. I just want to see Batshuayi.
That's right. Yeah.
I want to see him play, and I maybe get Fabregas behind him and let's do some stuff.
Would that be a problem though, considering how poor they looked against West Ham in the EFL Cup when they did rotate? I mean, how can they play this 3-4? System without their key players? It's a very demanding style of football.
I think you don't. I think, especially when you've got opposition like Peterborough, no disrespect to Peterborough, but when you've got the amount of money and talented players in your squad, do you necessarily have to play a mentally taxing system? Can you not just wheel out your guys in a 4-2-3-1 and be like, look, go do the ting.
Go do it. I think that's exactly what Chelsea have enough quality, even with their B team, even if they send out Loftus-Cheek and Chalaba, you know, and Ola Aina and these guys who are up and coming but aren't really there yet. They've got enough quality to see through Peterborough. They might struggle in the fourth round if they get someone a bit trickier, but I mean, you know, again, with greatest respect to Peterborough, no. Frankly, Conte, because it's FA Cup, so it's a week after, he might even pack the first team, frankly, because it's not they're playing every 3 days, so he might even think, okay, you know what, let's get right back on track and absolutely blow Peterborough out of the water.
Would that be a better idea, just to get the momentum back into the team, get everyone winning again, getting the mentality right, Tom?
I do think there will be changes. I think that, you know, there's no need to risk injury at the same time.
Very important.
That's, you know, they can happen, particularly with the greatest respect to Peterborough. I'm conscious of using that phrase too much in this. But, you know, if someone comes in with a pretty robust tackle, which you know that can happen in this kind of fixture when they're really up for it.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
at Stamford Bridge in a game where they want to leave everything out on the pitch. You know, injuries can happen. So I think he may be tempted to wrap the likes of Hazard, Costa, Kante's in Cornwall.
And give maybe Chalabar someone a reward because he's been doing well coming off the bench.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Clearly West Ham played a much stronger team in the EFL Cup, but Peterborough aren't going to be without their own danger men. On loan from West Ham, in fact, is Martin Samuelsson, who is quite a strapping lad for a creative attacking midfielder winger type. 6'2.5". He's widely seen as one of the great big hopes of Norwegian football at the moment. I mean, I've seen him play. He's very, very
silky
on the ball.
That half inch is very important.
It is very important. I mean, it might be interesting seeing up against Chelsea's second string. He's not exactly a powerhouse, but he's got enough about him. He's quite skillful. Maybe one to watch. If you are looking for a bit of an upset, that might be the key to it, maybe. Speaking of West Ham, will be hosting Manchester City in I think, the big fixture, I'd
Definitely.
Say, of the round. That's on Friday night. Tonight, actually, we're recording on Friday morning. West Ham lost 2-0 in their last game in the league to Man United, of all teams, at home. City, meanwhile, beat Burnley 2-1 at the Etihad, and Pep was not very happy in the aftermath of that game.
He was so upset.
As we said just earlier, West Ham upset the balance of Chelsea's 3-4-3 in the EFL Cup when they played Mikel Antonio up front in a very busy, a defensive forward kind of ploy, and it really upset Chelsea's defence. Do you reckon that could make City's defence uncomfortable, looking at how Gray and Barnes for Burnley kind of did a bit of a run on them in the first half?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, West Ham will play on the break, and Mikel Antonio up front is absolute, because he's the perfect blend of power, pace, and actually quite a sharp eye for goal. You know,
so especially with his head.
Yeah, especially with his head. I mean, you know, you look at City's centre backs, and I mean, Otamendi will relish the aerial challenge against him. But if Antonio can get onto Kolarov, I mean, Kolarov's not going to relish that. You know, so there's a lot of space at the back for City to be exploited, because they play such ambitious football still, and you know, and the defenders aren't necessarily the best or ready to cope with that fully. Otamendi seems okay. Stones does in patches, but the rest of them, no way.
Do you reckon we'll see Stones? He's been benched a lot recently.
I think we'll see him. I think you've got to bring him in. I think he'll start. I think Stones and Otamendi will be the back pairing. I think Kolarov will probably play left back, and then I don't know who will play right back. I mean, it really doesn't matter. Their fullbacks are all terrible. So, but I think.
Terrible, disaster, and hideous.
No, I think West Ham could really cause City some problems. At London Stadium, the atmosphere should be pretty bouncing. This is their big chance to win a trophy this season. I think it could be very interesting.
Paye is top of the charts at the moment across Europe, top five leagues for chances created this season. Some people said he's dropped off, but by the numbers, he's still doing it, Tom.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how they approach this one, West Ham. I agree with Mo that it's going to be, you know, looking to exploit those gaps in between the fullback and centre half with Antonio's pace. It was interesting the other day when I watched him against Man United, because it obviously coincided with Fuguli sending off, but the number of long balls that Angelo Ogbonna, which is just a regular feature of his game from whenever I've seen him, he just seems incapable of playing a pass into into your Nobles, Kouyates, those kind of players. And I think Payet's role in this will almost be bizarrely looking to play close to Antonio to link up, you know, closely with him and pick up on some of those second balls, that kind of thing, in and around the area. Lanzini as well, just playing, you know, in front of the City back four and using Antonio in that respect, because
almost being a bit like Ali and Eriksen to some extent.
Absolutely, yeah. And Cresswell as well, if he's not bombing down the left-hand side, he's looking for those balls into the channel as well. So I'll be interested to see whether Noble and Kouyaté sort of bypassed again, because that just seemed to be the recurring theme against Man United. Payet going to have to watch City monopolise possession quite a bit. It's important for him to be an important part of the play when West Ham do have the ball and when Antonio is latching onto those through balls.
To me, West Ham seem like a bit of an enigma this season. I mean, they've made 7 defensive errors that have led to goals in the league, which is the worst of any team, unsurprisingly. But if you actually look at the amount of passes by their team, or by all teams, in the opposition's box, only City have made more passes in the opposition's box than West Ham, which is bizarre. That's utterly bizarre.
They need a striker.
They do, yeah. They do. Yeah. So, I mean, but at the other end, is Sergio Aguero is going to be the man to punish these guys, right? I mean, there's talk of Gabriel Jesus coming in, but do you think Guardiola's being a bit harsh on not appreciating just the goals that Aguero gives to his team?
Gabriel Jesus has been training with the side for like a week. I don't think he's going to come in. I don't think this is not the game to introduce Gabriel Jesus. I think Sergio Aguero, no, he's not being harsh on him. Sergio Aguero is a fantastic punisher of small teams, but we've seen before his record against the elite sides in the Champions League is terrible. 0.16 goals from open play in over 1,000 minutes, you know.
That hat-trick against Bayern, though.
Ooh. Yeah, and again, Bayern didn't need to win or draw. So, you know, look, he doesn't do well against the best sides because they know how to nullify him. You know, this is the guy who allegedly in training, you know, is saying, don't worry about me not training. Well, I'll score a hat-trick at the weekend. Everyone will be happy anyway. That's not the kind of attitude Guardiola wants. You know, he's a very, very, very talented player, but he doesn't work hard at it enough and he doesn't work at tactical shape enough to really be the kind of forward Guardiola needs. He'll play right now because he can punish weak sides, and that's what City need him to do. And I think he will probably do well against West Ham again. Adrian will be in goal. So, but you know,
oh mate.
But you know, I think long term, I think Gabriel Jesus is the answer up front.
Mm. In midfield, there's probably less uncertainty over who will play. I mean, Fernandinho's out. Gundogan's injured forever. So Yaya Toure is going to have to be the man to drive things on, isn't he, Carl?
Yeah, I've described Yaya Toure as I think Yaya Toure has loads of similarities to Zinedine Zidane, and then everyone gets really mad at me for saying that. I think he's a fantastic creative midfielder. I think he's elegant on the ball. I also think he goes into airplane mode when the team doesn't have possession. Pick up signal
to save his battery, or
to save his battery, maybe to whatever. But if when City do not have the ball, that guy, no signal.
No text messages, nothing. That guy's chilling.
I mean, I've been to London Stadium. The Wi-Fi signal's not bad, so could he be West Ham's worst nightmare?
Fibre.
No. I'm going to give this a West Ham win. Ooh. Why not? West Ham going to win this due to shenanigans and chicanery.
That's what we like to see. Speaking of chicanery and shenanigans, Jose Mourinho, Manchester United versus Reading. Is this a chance for Mourinho to kind of blow away a standard for Van Gaal? I mean, Reading's tactics under Stam, very patient possession.
Yeah.
Not that many shots, very similar to his fellow Dutchman. It's so soon after basically destroying David Moyes and showing him what a real United team should look like, as what some people have said at Old Trafford. Is this a chance for him to again kind of exercise one of his predecessors?
Yeah, part of me thinks Mourinho's just going to park the bus just to hit them on the break, just to be like, you had all that possession, didn't mean anything. But no, I think he'll set his team out, and I think he'll probably put out most of all of his big guns, and they'll absolutely, I don't know, blow Reading away, because United can be profligate to the maximum at sometimes, but I think United will win
kind
the
of
game.
Beautifully so. I must admit, I was there when they beat Middlesbrough.
Yeah,
and you can almost tell Old Trafford wasn't too frustrated by the lack of goals, because you're like, they might be trying to score wonder goals, but at least they're trying to score wonder goals.
The football was sensational, and this is the thing. It's very, very, first of all, it's un-Mourinho-esque, really, to indulge creative players that much. Secondly, it's very Fergie. Like, you watched that game, and United were just had laid siege to the goal.
Self-expression as well.
And it was just, individual players trying individual things, crosses, wing play, and chances being created. And that's just classic United, classic Fergie. And I think even if the results aren't necessarily forthcoming, if Mourinho keeps the side playing like that, he'll have a lot of people will give him a lot of time.
Which is what Moyes and Van Gaal did.
That's exactly what that's what did for them. Their football was boring and turgid. This is exciting stuff. Okay, it doesn't work, but people aren't going to turn on Mourinho.
Does it not work? Tom, you said earlier that Mourinho's United are playing their way into the title race, really. I mean, they might be sixth in the table in the Premier League, going back to the Premier League now. But in terms of the form table, they're right up there, I think. They're probably ahead of Chelsea now, actually, in terms of the form.
Absolutely. And they're rock solid as well. Like, I would not have been the first person to have earmarked Phil Jones and Marcos Rojo as a successful centre-back partnership.
Literally the partnership of my dreams. I only dreamed that, and it's actually happened. Amazing.
You are a big Rojo stalwart, and I think he's...
Love Rojo.
Terrible.
Yeah, no, I mean,
but, you know, it's working, so...
That's management, that's coaching.
Yeah, fair play to them. Like, I don't know whether Lindelof will materialise or not, but, you know, you look at it right now and think... And it looks to me like a very makeshift back line, but if it's not broke, you know, why fix it? They just look so in tune in each department at the moment, and I wonder how much he's going to change this 11 this weekend, because I think there is a need to get Rashford in, possibly play a few, a few of the youngsters, maybe Luke Shaw at left back, that kind
of
thing.
Put Memphis Depay in the window.
Oh,
poor Memphis.
But it's a good point, though. I mean, Ibrahimovic and Pogba have pretty much played every single minute they can, and the season is long. They haven't exactly had Christmas off, have they? So there's going to be a need to refresh the team, to rotate a bit. And I mean, after the Middlesbrough game, Mourinho did say in his press conference that he sounded like he was a bit unhappy with the amount of centre-backs he's got for this next run of games, because Eric Bailly is now at the African Cup of Nations so quickly after finally coming back from injury. Who do you expect to come in to face Reading? I mean, is there a chance for Wayne Rooney to come back? He's top of the charts for Man United for chances created. Assists per 90 minutes in the Premier League this season with 0.55 per 90.
Yeah, Rose's going to indulge Rooney. It's going to be a very perfunctory kind of mishmash plodding 2-0 win, I reckon. I think Pogba will start. Ibrahimovic will be rested, I believe.
Mkhitaryan.
Mkhitaryan will probably play. I think we're going to spend a lot of time looking at Jose yell at Rashford, only to have Zlatan come on and score the second goal. I think it's going to be one of those games.
Yeah. In terms of the back line, do you think that Jones and Rojo will continue, or might we see the return of Blind and Smalling or anything going on?
I think
like
Chris
that?
Smalling, in his last two major appearances, has made five major defensive errors. I don't think he's getting anywhere near that team again for a while. I think...
Has basically Rojo done a space jam on him?
Maybe that's what's happened. Maybe that's what's happened.
Poor Mike. Poor Mike Smalling.
It would explain a lot, because... Well, no, I'll tell you what this is.
Can we see Fosu Mensah finally?
Oh, in my dreams, you see Fosu Mensah. Because this is the player who, I think, if he wasn't 18 years old, would be starting every single week. Because he's exactly a Mourinho kind of player.
Oh, yeah.
He's aggressive, he's energetic, he's technically competent, and he's just adventurous. But he can also be very disciplined if you need him to be. Yeah, the only thing against him from a Mourinho point of view is he's 18 years old, or 19, I think. He'll go with Blinder. He'll go with Rojo and Jones because it's 1 week to the next game as well. And
that sounds like a detective agency.
And it's a very good partnership. It's two defenders who have flaws, but put them together and it sort of works. I don't really understand.
It almost sounds like a detective agency drama as well. Like two men with flaws.
It really does. Tottenham United's back line, it's makeshift. I mean, it's an Ecuadorian right winger. It's an assortment of different people left back while Luke Shaw gets over whatever his problem is, and it's Rojo and Jones at the centre back. You know, it just shouldn't work, but it does. And I think it's a testament to Mourinho. You have to give it to him. Whatever else he is or does or doesn't do, you know, he knows how to coach a defence.
Mm. Tommy, you said a bit earlier on that Arsenal would be frustrated by their result in the Premier League, but so must Liverpool be as well. Their 2-2 draw with Sunderland in their last game out. They're going to play Plymouth in the FA Cup. They're kind of in a bit of a weird place themselves in terms of selection issues. Henderson likely to be missing again. They look like a very different team without him through the middle. How much will he miss, and who do you think could come in to replace him? There's even been talk, if he's fit, of Matip stepping up to play defence midfield.
Yeah, I thought Henderson's absence, Henderson's performance in the Merseyside derby, I thought was one of the most kind of understated individual displays of the season. I thought he was ultimately the key to them getting on top in that second half and gradually grinding Everton down. I thought he was absolutely brilliant in that game. And he's been, for me, as kind of crucial a component as Lallana has, as, you know, Mane and Firmino have this season. I think Matty might be a solution there, but possibly whether he looks to bring in Grujic possibly into that role as well.
Kevin Stewart, maybe.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Kevin Stewart.
There's been a lot of talk about him. Yeah. He's not been afraid to blood the youth, Klopp, and I think if he has faith in those players, he's willing to give them an opportunity to impress, and this seems like a good opportunity. Exeter City in the FA Cup last season, he played the likes of Brad Smith, Shea Yojo scored in that one as well, I think. So
it was a similar case as well against Leeds in the EFL Cup, where Trent Alexander-Armstrong came on. Not Armstrong.
Trent
Alexander-Arnold
came on.
Yeah. Woodburn came on off the bench to become the youngest ever scorer for Liverpool. Yeah. But also Kevin Stewart was there as well, and he's playing a very interesting role. He's almost like a weird halfback thing. He was playing defence balls in midfield. It's very interesting.
No, I think there's a chance for an upset in this, purely because I think Klopp will send out the kids. He's shown repeatedly that, not that he doesn't want to win cup competitions, but he believes that this is a place to blood the youngsters. And Klopp very much does believe in promoting from within.
And even in that game against the Leeds, Mane was still playing. He's such an important player for them. He's now headed off to AFCON.
Now that's a problem. They don't have anyone like Sadio Mane. When they had Coutinho and Mane, you could lose one. You can't lose both. Coutinho's not back yet. That's a problem for them. Their title race this game as well. Without Mane and without Coutinho,
I couldn't believe the skepticism in some quarters that he's signing this summer. They signed him, I thought straight away, what a signing!
He's such a Klopp player.
You could not.
It's almost like the Senegalese Marco Reus, isn't he?
That's what you said.
You can.
That's a drop. That I'm sorry.
They
I'm
could
sorry.
Not have found, in my mind, really a better fit for them in the market at that level of price. He's been absolutely brilliant, and as I say, I was surprised that there was this kind of perception of him being almost sort of
like inconsistent and flighty.
Just an odd game player, in that he'd turn up and score a hat trick against Liverpool and then just be completely rash with his finishing the next. But
this is playing for Southampton.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, as you've seen with Koeman as well, going to Everton, he is a bit of a long ball manager. He wants the wingers to stick wide, whereas Mane wants to come inside.
Exactly. Yeah. He as
one
I say,
reason why Memphis should not go to Everton.
Anyway, that might be another pod. But before we move on,
I like the sound of that pod.
Yeah, along with Chelsea, Liverpool have enjoyed the advantage of being out of Europe, as we've already discussed, on the Blues this season. They're currently top of the Premier League for goals, chances created, and tackles in the opposition's half. But do you think kind of the creaks that have shown? I mean, okay, it was Sunderland. It was a busy fixture schedule. But do you think this is showing they've still got a bit of a problem managing a busy schedule? Are there worries for Europe next year? Could this cup run be a bit of a problem for Klopp, Carl?
Klopp ball needs a winter break and a proper pre-season. And I think it was really interesting to watch him have his first proper like festive schedule break. The squad is not deep enough to make a title challenge, unfortunately. It will get there one day.
You're ruling Liverpool out this year.
Yeah, I don't think Liverpool can win the title. I think, you know, Mane's off, Coutinho's in and out,
there's this weird Sturridge conundrum. I don't know. There are enough question marks for me to say they can't win the league.
But isn't this the point where Sturridge steps up and he starts to score those goals to cover the cracks elsewhere in the team?
I'd love for that to happen. I'd really love for that to happen. But I think Sturridge is in a certain position that means it won't happen. And if it does happen, it wouldn't even necessarily yield the results that Liverpool need to turn the title around.
He's a bit like, he is to Klopp what Aguero is to
Guardiola. Yeah, it's the same thing. He's a brilliant striker who just doesn't really fit the system Klopp's trying to play. It's a shame for him because he's really good.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, when you don't fit the system, you don't fit the system. I think Liverpool are finished second this year purely because they're only playing one game a week.
Spurs will be facing Villa in the FA Cup third round. Does Pochettino, another manager who's trying to get rhythm into his side, does he stick with his side? Does he make some changes himself? We're going to see Sissoko in the starting line or Janssen back. What do you reckon, Tom?
I was going to say earlier with Spurs that I think they interested to see them link with Bruma to give them a potential another wide option.
Suspended apparently by Galatasaray for liking Spurs posts on Instagram or something.
Yes, very interesting. I just feel with them, and I agree that I think it's going to be ultimately a lack of kind of alternative resources for Pochettino in attack. I mean, Janssen's been probably what I expected him to be as a striker arriving from Alkmaar, in that it was a gamble. Frankly, it hasn't worked. Mm. Maybe this weekend might be the making of him. I don't know. But I just feel that they're lacking that depth up front. They look so strong everywhere, apart from in that final third area where, as you say, if Kane was to go on a bit of a run with a loss of form, I don't know who steps up to the plate and
Dele Alli. Can you get another brace maybe Dele against Villa? That'd be a record, wouldn't it?
It's possible. It's very possible. I want Janssen to be great. I want him to be great because he's got a massive behind, and he feeds into my theory that having a massive behind makes you a great striker.
At the moment, he's kind of the man who's proving it wrong.
He's doing the massive behind stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly it, right? He's a great hold up player. He just can't seem to score.
He'll come. He'll probably get a penalty against again, Villa, and we'll see what happens.
But speaking of systems and individuals to overcome them, Jack Grealish. Obviously, he's a Villa now. He's been coming for a bit of criticism, as he always does for his, he's a bit of an idiosyncratic figure in the game. But could he create the magic to turn this game for Villa against Spurs? Upset the odds, Tom?
Bruce is going to make them really difficult to beat. I don't think this is a walk in the park for Spurs at all. I think it may be that they do have to grind Villa down a little bit. And Grealish is that kind of stardust, I guess, up front that can cause them a few problems. I think Spurs will win. I think it's going to be, but I think it's going to be a lot tighter than some people probably think. Because I just think Bruce is going to make them compact across the pitch and not give them enough space to play through them and between the lines.
Before we look at the other wonderful fixtures in the FA Cup third round, just a quick one. Preston are going to be hosting Arsenal. We talked a bit earlier about the problems finding the midfield pairing. Obviously, Coquelin is injured, quite a nasty injury. He's going to be ruled out for a fair amount of time. But would you just go back to the question, Giroud, Sanchez or Perez to start, Tom?
Wenger spoke yesterday about the need to rest Sanchez. Perez is a doubt, which makes me wonder whether, given, I think it would just be a huge risk to throw Welbeck in from the start. I think, again, it's probably not the kind of fixture that we want to be, looking at Welbeck coming straight into the 11. I think it probably will be Giroud leading the line. I think I'd like to see the likes of Rein Adelaide, maybe Maitland-Niles get a run out. Rob Holding, particularly at centre-half, he's been very good every time he's played this season.
I mean, Maitland-Niles might be the kind of left-field solution to midfield. He did play there alongside Coquelin, I think, against Reading in the EFL Cup.
Yeah.
He looked pretty handy there. I'm not going to say he was Cazorla-esque, because that's a very big thing to say to someone, but he's quite good in tight spaces as well, isn't he?
Tidy on the ball, got a good touch. Looks like he's, quite a physical player as well. Looks like he can cover ground, which
he can play about seven positions as well, can't he?
Exactly. That, Wenger obviously loves versatility in players, and I wonder whether he might look at playing him. He played him right back against Nottingham Forest in the EFL Cup earlier rounds. So I wonder whether there's potential. Maybe I don't think Hector Bellerin needs to be rested as such, but given the uncertainty over both Debuchy and Jenkinson's futures, it might be a chance for him to look at Maitland-Niles in that position to see if that can become a more regular thing. Yeah. And also with the central midfield pairing, I think Wenger will you know, want that evidence from Ramsey and Xhaka. Go out there, boss this game, show that you can be a midfield pairing that, frankly, between now and the Chelsea game at the start of February, it's a presentable run of fixtures. I mean, yeah. Bournemouth away was a presentable fixture.
And they need them as well. I mean, Elneny is also another player away at the African Cup of Nations. So there are chances up for grabs. Arsenal, we're going to move quickly now to the other. There's so many games on during the FA Cup third round. I kind of challenged the pod to pick out the ones that they're looking forward to watching the most and the ones that people should be following. So, Carl, I'm going to come to you first. What are the fixtures that caught your eye from the treasure trove of names there?
I'm really into Everton versus Leicester City, which is the battle of teams who will probably have a Martinez-style 14th place Premier League finish.
Both of them. That's
the problem. I picked like four teams at the start of the season. Like, oh, they were like Martinez. They were going to be really good going forward. A complete shambles going back, and I can't figure out what's going to go on. So what happens when they play in the FA Cup? I don't know if they're going to rest their star players. Maybe Musa gets a start for Leicester. Everton's in a very particular run where we can't figure out how good Koeman is now, which I find really, really intriguing.
Well, he said he needs to take acting lessons, so maybe maybe it's a confidence trick that he's missing. I don't know.
Who knows? I think Andy Thomas wrote an excellent piece about how Koeman looks really, really friendly, but if you told me he killed someone in a car park, I would believe you. which is the thing. I can't read that face.
For any lawyers listening, this is a work of fiction. We're not accusing anyone.
I'm not saying he did. I'm just saying if you told me, I'd be like, oh,
okay.
Yeah. Fine. It wasn't his fault. It was a bad punch. Blah, 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 blah.
moving on.
But that's why, because I think Koeman's fascinating to look at as a human being.
Tom, what's the fixture you're looking forward to?
Couple from me. What for Burton, firstly? I think that's a real banana skin for Watford, given their recent form. They just, the back three just looks so vulnerable. Cabal looks past it by a number of years.
Prudel's made four defensive errors since the start of the new year.
Yeah.
More than anyone. Terrible.
He seems weak in the air. He doesn't look particularly... I think the thing with the back three as well is I wouldn't look at any of those centre-halves and think, yeah, you know, any of them would be comfortable taking the ball off Gomez at the back and getting Watford playing. They just scream vulnerability for me. And I think Burton's formation matches up with the three at the back. They've got pace out wide with Akins and Dyer, who can, you know, exploit those kind of defensive weaknesses. So I think that might be... There aren't that many fixtures that scream out to me as potential upset, but that one's got it written on there for me. And Cambridge Leeds on the Monday night, just because all the other FA Cup ties that are being televised, either all Premier League affairs or Premier League teams against fairly sized championship clubs like Man United, Reading, Spurs, Villa. I just think there's a nice romanticism, despite the fact it's on a blinking Monday night, of Cambridge against Leeds United. Leeds will take a great following down there. Leeds are in good form. Normally, I might say that the potential for an upset there, but Gary Monk's done a great job there. So I'm looking forward to just seeing them on the TV as much as anything.
Mo, what's the match you're looking for?
Bolton Palace. Come on, big Sam's return. You know, come on, that's going to be absolutely outstanding. You know, on the one hand, Palace, you know, whatever, he could probably do without having a cup run because he's got to save them from relegation. But on the other hand, he's not going to want to go back there and not win. Like, he's going to want to go back there and absolutely smack. You know, the way it ended with them was not very good either. They wouldn't give him the money he wanted to improve the squad. So I think he'll go back there.
Will there be pints of wine?
Pints? Yeah. I was gonna think of a metaphor there, but yeah, pints of wine poured all
pints
over.
Of wine, pints of football all over.
It's gonna be awesome. Yeah. And the other one is, of course, Middlesbrough versus Sheffield Wednesday. Just because any chance to watch Adama Traore play football should be a chance to just watch a
pure
force
joy.
Of nature. It's just amazing,
remarkable. It's really hard to describe.
He can't cross the ball consistently to save his life. But you know, if they had a striker that made near post runs, he'd clean up.
I remember Michael Cox, ahead of one major tournament, said that Japan are the best team at the tournament. In the middle third, they can't do anything at either side, and that's kind of Adama Traore. between the boxes, he's brilliant. Either box,
it's risky. But you look at what he does do well is his near post crosses, because of course he's running so quickly, he can't actually stand up with any accuracy. So if they had someone that made near post runs like Javi Hernandez or whatever, they'd clean up.
You should send this letter to Aita Karanka.
I think I will,
with a reverse address to send the check to get this sorted.
That's what I'm going to do, my friend.
You should definitely do it. Any other games sticking out for you, Carl?
No, I'm pretty much full. I'm sated.
Pretty full?
I'm sated. FA Cup weekend is always the weekend where I wake up on a Friday and go, oh, God, I should change my fantasy football. Oh, never mind.
That sounds like a relief if ever there was one. For anyone who isn't able to click on websites and look for themselves, the other games are as following. Stoke take on Wolves in the third round of the FA Cup. Wigan are against Forest. Sutton United take on AFC Wimbledon in a West London clash for any fans of lower league and non-league football in the capital. Do check it out. Sutton United, a wonderful club. Sunderland take on Burnley. Burnley won 4-1 at Turf Moor, so it'd be interesting to see how Sunderland react at the Stadium of Light. West Brom take on Derby. Tony Pulis is up in eighth in the Premier League.
What a man.
And absolutely hammering home his advantages for West Brom at the moment. A wonderful story for the Welshman in the flat cap and the tracksuit, but interesting to see how he does against Derby, who have obviously Steve McLaren back in charge over there. Steve McLaren.
He's never going to live that down, is he?
He's not. He never is. Brentford take on Eastleigh, obviously a big one for analytics fans. Wickham take on Stourbridge. Brighton, the Chris Hughton's promotion chasing championship side, take on MK Dons.
Gotta love Chris Hughton.
Yeah, you do. And hopefully he'll be up back in the Premier League soon. Ipswich take on Lincoln. Barrow versus Rochdale. Birmingham versus Newcastle. Stanley versus Luton.
Accrington Stanley? Who are they?
Yeah, Accrington Stanley. Exactly. QPR versus Blackburn. Bristol City versus Fleetwood. Hull City versus Swansea City. A relegation battle by proxy in some ways. Norwich versus Southampton. Interest for Nathan Redmond there. Rotherham versus Oxford. Blackpool versus Barnsley, Huddersfield versus Port Vale. Klopp clone David Wagner in charge for Huddersfield there to check out for any fans who are looking for the next Klopp in English football. Millwall take on Bournemouth in what could be one of the last big matches at the Den, considering what's happening there with their very sad, actually. No one knows about this. The local authorities are doing a compulsory purchase order to buy up their land and sell it to a developer. So, yeah. Check out that if you haven't already, because it's
London
a very, very bad story. Sunday sees Cardiff take on Fulham. And as we've already discussed as well on Monday, Cambridge versus Leeds. Rewind that if you need to find out anything else is going on. Kickoff times available online. Not reading them out. Part four of the pod, we moved to quizzes.
Well done.
That was outstanding. Very good.
Europe. I'm going to ask you all three questions. Would you rather questions? I just want one or the other. I'm going to come to you first. Would you rather win the FA Cup or secure fourth place? You can't do both.
133, so I'm saying win the FA Cup. There's still something special about it. It's just, it's great. You know, okay, semi-final shouldn't be at Wembley, but it's great.
Tom, what about yourself?
Winning the FA Cup, tangible success. Mm. Simple as that.
Carl?
Finish fourth place.
Ooh.
Yes.
Explain yourself.
Yes, you shouldn't have a semi-final in Wembley. That's terrible. But fourth place, get into Europe. It's... While recently we found out that fourth place in Champions League just means bigger wages when you're buying players, it's still like a... I love that. Going, oh, but it's Champions League football. All you're saying is it means big wages. But it's still a gimme, and it shows that you're a club that's able to go around Europe and go, come on, then. We got some stuff to do.
this is a bit of a Chelsea versus Spurs question. Would you ever hold the lead or have the momentum, Carl?
Have the momentum, definitely. From what I know from playing many team sports, it's really, really, really fun charging someone with the momentum. Because then even if you... There's a quite nice feeling where if you lose and you've got the momentum, you can go, right, there you are, chins up, training on Tuesday, we go again.
We go again.
Tom, what about yourself?
Difficult one. Because I think looking at Chelsea at the moment, it entirely hinges on the context of it. Right now, if I'm probably wanting to be Chelsea than I am wanting to be a United or a Spurs
you're
gonna personally.
Hold the lead.
Yeah, I'm going to. I think, as I say, it all depends on the context of it. But in the context of a 13 match winning run prior to this defeat, as I said earlier, that's no flash in the pan for me. That's probably indicative of a team that...
You could gain the momentum back.
Exactly.
Very nice. Mo, hold the lead or have the momentum.
Well, I'm a Crofis, so I'm just going to say whatever. Hold the lead. Absolutely hold the lead. You can dominate the play, own the ball, own the opponent, own the game.
You're going to hold the lead and the ball.
Everything, mate. I'm holding everything.
John Stones to start or John Stones to continue on as a sub for Man City?
John Stones to start. Come on, we've got to get John Stones good. If English football can make John Stones into a thing, English football has a chance.
He is already a thing. It's just how good is that thing? Tom,
a good thing, I mean.
John Stones to start or John Stones as a sub?
John Stones as a sub. Call me old-fashioned, but a defender's primary job remains to be a defender. Cesar Azpilicueta is one of my favourite defenders in the Premier League, in that he is not the most competent attacking defender, but as the cross for his for Costa's goal at Palace proved, he does have quality in the final third, but he's also a brilliant defender who week in, week out is consistent. I feel that Stones needs to, and you know, I think John Stones is great, and I think he can become a very good player. Mm. But I do think there needs to be a bit of a change in psyche with him, in that I think great, play the ball out from defence when it's required.
So but what you're really saying is John Stones at left back for two seasons.
Don't quote me on that.
Carl, would you have John Stones to start on the bench?
John Stones to start. I think if he's on the subs bench, his mentality will be he comes on the game. Whatever I do might affect this, might swing this. Mm-hmm. And if you want John Stones to be the John Stones that we all think and want him to be, he has to start. He has to be told, go out and do your thing. And if it doesn't work out, we'll take you off at 60 and don't worry about it. But you're going to keep doing this and keep doing this and keep doing this. Whereas if you keep giving him 30 minutes at the end of games, he's going to be very caged and he's going to keep thinking, oh man, I've got to defend, which will inevitably limit the things that we want him to do, the things that he's so good and so unique for.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of being cagey, we're now going to do a quick round of Squawker Versus.
Oh, here we go.
It's going to be Mo versus Tom.
Oh, here we go.
I've got three quick statty-based questions. Unfortunately, the buzzers have gone missing, so you just have to put your hands up and I'll just come to you who comes first. So three questions, two of them multiple answers. That's number three and number two and three. So don't jump in too quickly on those ones, but the first one you can. So the first question is, which second division side at present has won the most FA Cups?
When you say second division championship, I'm assuming.
I do, yeah.
That's Aston Villa.
It is. Number one goes to 1-0. Question two, Squawker recently looked at the players who created the most chances so far this season across all Europe's top five leagues. But who's created the most chances without actually creating an assist in the Premier League this season? Four options for you. A, Shaqiri. B, Routledge. C, Lanzini. Or D, Scott Arfield. Oh, Tom's gone.
Gonna go for Routledge.
Oh, no.
Lanzini.
It's not. It's 1-0 still to Mo. There's no score. It was a Shaqiri.
Shaqiri.
Yeah. Number three, the final question. It could be a draw, it could be a win. We'll have to see what happens here. Who has scored the most goals per 90 minutes in 2017 so far? Got four options for you. A, Defoe. B, Gareth McCauley. C, Sergio Aguero. Or D, Dele Alli.
Dele Alli.
It is. It's 2-0 to Mo. It's a win for Squawker. There we go. Before we wrap up, I want to know, if you're not into the FA Cup third round, because I know some people aren't into their cups, you're into all these other foreign leagues, eh? What European match would you recommend our listeners tune into? Tom, I'm going to come to you first.
Well, I'll caveat it with that. I feel very bad on Mo for robbing Barcelona off of him. But it stuck out to me that this weekend's game, Villarreal-Barcelona, it's given the defeat at Bilbao and the kind of sense at the moment of them not everything going their own way a little bit, I think it's a very difficult fixture for them to go to Villarreal and the kind of almost a little bit of a clash of styles there. I think it's going to be just a fascinating watch for me personally.
Villarreal is a good side as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I want to see Barcelona go there and just make a statement, really, and prove, you know, that they are, you know, going to be the big player in the La Liga title race.
Mm-hmm. Carl, what's your European game of the week?
I'm going to go for Udinese versus Inter Sunday at 11 o'clock on BT Sport.
Are they paying you for that one?
No, I just did a lovely little Google.
You just wanted to usurp him with the kickoff time.
Boom.
and channel.
I'm fascinated by both Milan clubs. I think Inter Milan are the perennial year zero club who every time it doesn't quite go well, they chuck a grenade in and reset. So the experiment at the start of this season didn't quite work out with the poor. So I'm fascinated by that continuing thing, because if you want to play
a championship manager, a football manager, or a FIFA game right now, pick Inter because they're really fun to play with because they got lovely yellow socks. So why not?
Mo, what's your European game?
Real Sociedad versus Sevilla. That's third versus fifth, or fifth versus third, technically.
I'd like you to pick out a Sevilla game.
Well, you know.
Regular listeners will know I'm being sarcastic with that one.
Shout out to Nasri.
Something to Nasri. Real Sociedad, you know, they've gone five games in a row, that losing at home to Sevilla. They've won four, drawn one. They're very good at home. They're having a great season. They were fourth in the La Liga in 2016. They were fourth in La Liga. So, you know, over the calendar year, they're doing really well. They're playing really, really high level football. They've only lost once in the last eight games. You know, that was at the Riazor, so they're at home now as well. And, you know, the only Real Madrid scored more headers than them in the season. They're good in the air. William Jose, probably the signing of the season. Nine goals, you know, really, really looks a great signing for them. Gives them sort of a prowess. Sevilla are great, but they lost 3-0 to Real Madrid. They had some bad decisions go against them, but their finishing was really terrible. They need to remedy that very quickly because this is a big game. If they lose this game, it puts a dent in their fourth-place ambitions and gives Real Sociedad a big hope.
So it could be both a good spectacle and a good source of hipster points.
It'd be a fantastic game. And yes, of course, if you are into that sort of thing, it will be very hipstery.
Wonderful. Well, if you are into that sort of thing, do check it out. That is all we've got time for today on the Squawker Talk podcast. Carl, thank you very much for coming on.
It's been a pleasure.
You do your own podcast as well, don't you?
I do.
Do you want to give a quick plug?
I do a football podcast, Talking Tactics. It's me with Daniel Tuluk and a lovely gentleman called Have Hope. It comes out every single Tuesday morning. Sometimes funny, sometimes serious, always football. That's the slogan.
Beautiful. That's what we like to hear. Tom, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you. It's been a great debut. Thank you for having me. Oh, and for any fans of football clubs, if you could come and check out football.london, new website that we've launched. That'd be absolutely brilliant.
Watford are included, I believe. Controversial.
Watford are included, yes.
huge.
Which we discussed earlier that the M25 can justify that.
If you can get there with an Oyster card, I think that, you know, there's grounds to allow it, I think.
That's a decent shout.
Crossrail going to Reading.
Ooh.
Yeah, but that...
This is another pod for another time. We already said we've got to wrap this up. But Mo, thank you very much for coming on once again.
Always a pleasure, Greg. Always a pleasure.
And as you said at the start of the show, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to all our listeners. And do check out more Squawker Talk podcasts in the weeks and months ahead. We've got another Squawker one-on-one with the wonderful Rory Briggs and Musa Okwonga, the football poet, author, journalist, and many other wonderful things coming out on Wednesday next week. Do check it out, and thanks for joining us.